ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, I'm Sana Qadar, and I host All in the Mind on ABC Radio National. If you've ever wondered why people behave the way they do, or what it's like to live inside their heads, this is the show for you. We dive deep each week into a topic related to mental health or psychology, from the promise and perils of manifesting, to how to get better sleep, to what it's like to experience psychosis. Hear it now on the ABC Listen app.
Hello, it's the Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Forward.
Am Anfang in my beginning. Ach, in principio erat.
We're listening to Arone. It's an experimental radio piece by the Italian modernist composer Luciano Berio. And it's his centenary this year. In the second half of today's program, we're going to be diving into Berio's music with his former student and current ABC chair, Kim Williams, as our guide. First, though, I'm very happy to have the self-styled Bogan Boys of Brisbane, the trad band Armady, in the studio. They're poised to play for us. They've got accordion, banjo, guitar and fiddle. And this is a song from their new album. The album's called Beyond Cape Capricorn. The song is St. Helena.
Wait, I've got to tune my accordion. All right, done.
In 1867, I was sent away to prison for the murder of a man who killed my son. The jail at Petrie Terrace was overloaded, so they sent us to the island as a slave beneath the sun. The first thing we did there was cut the trees down to the cliff. Nowhere to hide and nowhere left to run. After wrapping him in fabric, we dug a grave for old Fitzpatrick. He was the first but not the last to succumb. These are our days on St. Helena, and the waves crash on the shore so small. We can see the lights of Brisbane, so far away and yet not far at all. A hard labour there was tough, could break a man right to his core. The sun hurt, but the whip hurt even more. We churned out bricks in the factory to build your city hall. And at night I just stare blankly at the wall. These are our days on St. Helena, and the waves crash on the shore so small. And far across the bay we can see the lights of Brisbane, so far away and yet not far at all. One night old John McCauley hatched a plan for us to join him and to escape back to the mainland Wynnum way. With nothing left to beat us, we climbed aboard the raft of timbers and set sail for life beyond Moreton Bay. But the power of the sea had overwhelmed us, gang of thieves, and the frigid ocean water took its toll. Old Morton left their marks and fed our bodies to the sharks, and the Lord had put to rest my suffering soul. These are our days on St. Helena, and the waves crash on the shore so small, and far across the bay we can see the lights of Brisbane, so far away and yet not far at all. These are our days on St. Helena, crash on the shore so small, and far across the bay we can see the lights of Brisbane, so far away and yet not far at all.
That was a song called St. Helena, and it was performed live in the Music Show studio by Amadi. And Amadi, thank you very much indeed. Welcome to the show. Introduce yourselves, would you?
Yeah, thanks for having us. I'm Lachlan. I'm the singer from Amadi, singer and guitar player.
I'm Jack. I play the accordion.
And I'm Sam, and I just generally stand on the end of the stage playing banjo.
We also have David McDonald.
Yes, our fiddle player.
The name Amadi is Gaelic, right? And it means nonsense.
Yes.
Now, that wasn't nonsense that we just heard. So,
well, you haven't come to our rehearsals, mate. There's plenty of nonsense there. We barely get through a track without divulging into boyish humour.
Or the Super Mario theme.
Or Super Mario.
Right, yeah, we won't put up any boyish humour on the music show, I'm telling you now. Tell us about that song, Lachlan. You wrote it, didn't you?
Yes. So St. Helena is a real island off in Moreton Bay. And in the 1800s, they built a prison on there to relieve some of the pressure in the Brisbane colony because there was too many prisoners about. And my dad used to actually work on that island as a tour guide when I was a kid. So I went over as a kid and was just enamored with the place. It's just a horrible, horrible situation us humans put ourselves into. But the perfect content for folk songs, I thought.
Well, tell us about writing a folk song. I mean, technically you can't do that, but that would pass muster, I reckon.
Well, yeah, it's a funny thing. Can you write a folk song these days? I just like telling stories through songs. It's just what I play in Dadgad. I think that lends a lot of folky timbre in the tuning of the guitar.
Dadgad, for any listeners who don't know, it's a way of tuning your guitar from the normal way, which is, what is it? EAD, standard tuning, leads to this sort of open feeling of the guitar.
That instant folk.
Instant folk, yes.
Just add water.
Yes. Or instant Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely it.
I have not had the pleasure of seeing you live, but my producer, C, has, and they tell me that at the National Folk Festival, the place was going off and it was just full of 20-year-olds kind of dancing madly.
That's kind of the accurate goal of the band, really. Yeah, just we just want everyone to dance. Most of the time we're not trying to sing sad folk songs. Actually, I'd say half the time.
Yeah.
We like to bring it down so that you can come back up, I think is a lot of the formula here.
We just love playing to live audiences. There's nothing better than seeing a whole bunch of people out dancing to your music. We try to do it every chance we can. And when we're in the position, we just try to keep it up. Just keep them going. Keep them on their feet.
I reckon Steve and Dan were having a great time dancing in there.
It looked like they were.
In the live room.
I mean, you've described the band as playing doofy folk stuff, which I guess is what you're talking about. But it also refers to the stomp box, which you use, which we haven't heard and are not going to. But we can hear a bit of it from your album, Beyond Cape Capricorn. Perhaps before we do, you could tell our listeners who can't see you either what a stomp box is and how it works.
So there's many different versions of a stomp box. Initially, lots of people would just get a block of wood with a little pickup inside it and just stomp on it. And that was the original sort of stomp box idea. We've got a computer that basically can receive a message. It knows when I'm stomping on this little electric kick pedal here. And I can just play any sound out of it now. That's how we sort of get EDM.
Yeah, the driving bass drum sound.
Yeah, and bass drops, etc.
And that helps to get the 20-year-olds dancing.
Oh, it sure does.
Yes, it does.
That's in fact what it's
I'm pretty
for.
Sure none of them are listening to the tunes. I think they're just listening to doof, doof, doof the whole time. We got a lot of complaints, actually, at the National Celtic Festival, because in the session bar, which is a few tents over from the main festival venue, all they could hear in the session bar was foom, 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 foom the entire time while we were on the stage.
Yes, that's right. Listen, while we talk about festivals, we should mention Bill Horitz, who died this week, who was, you know, the inventor of Woodford and really one of the most important figures in folk music in Australia. A word about festivals and what they mean to you.
Yeah, Sam can talk to that.
So it's very interesting because I've been very lucky in my life to attend, I think, 15 Woodford Folk Festivals now and about 25 National Folk Festivals. I was very privileged to actually know Bill Horitz myself. Exceptional man with an exceptional vision. It goes back to the ethos of just playing music to make people happy. And in Australia, it's coming back now, post-COVID, mm-hmm. in a big way. There's other festivals, Signet Folk Festival, National Celtic Festival. Illawarra Folk Festival. Port Fairy still around.
But it just proves that audiences still want to get out and do these things. They haven't disappeared since COVID. It's just taken everyone a little bit of time to get back to it.
Yeah.
But the vision is still there. It's like everything that Bill Horitz set up in Woodford, that's going to continue forever because he laid the groundwork for it.
And even with his very good friend Ted Egan, who also passed away just recently, they were the ones that put together the 500-year plan to sustain folk music and sustain an event.
And we don't take that lightly. We'll continue that legacy in our own way.
Well, speaking of legacies, perhaps, Sam, you could tell us about yours because you go back generations, don't you?
Yes. My dad plays piano accordion. My mum plays piano. My aunt, who plays fiddle as well. I always like to say that I'm not the best fiddle player in my own family. I've been around it a very long time and very privileged that I get to play music that's fun and that people want to listen to, alongside working a day job, which I'm very grateful that I can
sustain both.
Shout out to Sam's dad, Dave DeSanti, who organises so many folk events himself around Brisbane. We were just at one last night at West End. He has folk nights at least once a week and all over Australia.
Yeah.
And Sam, do you find that you are drawing on your long experience? Because, I mean, we're talking about really from birth in your case, that you bring with you tunes and musical ideas that you've picked up along the way. I mean, is there a sense in which the tradition continues, the oral tradition?
Absolutely. And it's something I really champion and it's stuff we do. So two of the tracks on the album are traditional songs, one by the great Harry Robertson. The other one is The Poison Train, written by Michael O'Rourke, which we played in our band Oongawilly. So now we're just reinterpreting these songs differently and in giving them a new voice, essentially. And on top of that, there's a lot of tunes that we play that are from the Oral History Collection in the National Library of Australia. So I think there's about 4,000 hours of tape just sat in the basement of the National Library from various collectors that all captures stuff going back all the way to the 1950s and even earlier.
And we encourage everyone to look into that sort of stuff too. We want people to be just as interested in folk music as we are. So all of that history is really important to us.
Yeah. You're going to be playing again for us. Now you're going to do the Fandango that starts with a couple of tunes from Asturias, from Felpeu, actually, who we once upon a time had on the music show, and then kind of morphing seamlessly into something Irish to finish with. Jack, tell us about some of the older tunes, because, whilst Amadi writes its own material, as we've heard, you also pick up tunes from here, there, and just about everywhere.
We have a few tune experts in the band. Sam has been playing tunes all his life, so has David. We found these ones on a website called thesession.org, and it just has all the tunes in the world on it. Anyone can just go on. And we just found it when we were typing in random tunes, basically, and came up with this set called Fandango. And then we also then decided to put on just one of our favourite tunes that is from the session that we all play at. It was called The Paper Bird Reel. And so basically that's how we all met as well. We all play at the session in Brisbane. There's sort of trad sessions all over the country. We sort of played there and then we realized, oh, we should do a band. And I guess we had to make sets for it. So here we are.
Right. Well, you did that in the traditional way, really. I mean, apart from the internet, it was, but people have always put tunes together, haven't they?
Yes, absolutely. A common thing is to do a set of Just Reels, which are like the last two tunes we played there. But usually you do three tunes, all the same thing. But we find that sort of modern audiences tend to get a little bit bored by that. So we like to sort of change things up, make it exciting.
Change tempos, change time signatures, change key signatures, whatever keeps us on our toes and the audience on our toes.
Change pedalboard presets.
It starts off relatively sedate, but I can pretty much guarantee that all of our listeners will be out of their chairs by the time it ends. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. One, two, three, we'll be right back.
Fandango, and that's Amedy live in the Music Show studio. Amedy are pretty much everywhere, actually. Any folk festival you care to mention, including the Illawarra Folk Festival in January, and they appear just about weekly in Brisbane. If you go to the Music Show's website, you'll find information there. It's the Music Show on ABC Radio National. Before he was chair of the ABC, a long time before he was chair of the ABC, Kim Williams was a composition student of Luciano Berio. Kim assisted Berio with his enormous workload of commissions in the 1970s, including possibly his masterpiece, Coro, the large-scale composition for 40 voices and 40 instruments. We talked to Kim Williams about Berio 22 years ago when Berio died, and this year would have been the composer's centenary. So we've asked Kim Williams back to the studio to share his memories of the composer and his encyclopedic knowledge of Berio's music. Also, he'll tell us what the olive oil was like from Berio's hometown. As we heard at the top of the show, Berio was really good at having his pieces announce themselves, and here's another example. That's music by Luciano Berio. That's the opening of Labyrinthus 2. We heard Ensemble Musique Vivante conducted by Berio, and the voice and the words of Edoardo Sanguinetti. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Music Show the chair of the ABC, Kim Williams, who was once a student of this composer. Welcome, Kim.
Hi, Andy.
Last time you were on this show was when Berio died.
It was. He died the day after my birthday.
And that was in 2003. And we started with Labyrinth.
On the 27th of May he died.
And now we all know when your birthday is. There will be a card in the post. We started with that music on that occasion, I discovered, when I went back and had a look.
Well, it's a terrific piece. It was written for the 700th anniversary of the birth of Dante Alighieri. And it was one of the first really major commissions that Luciano Berio received. And it is a very representative work of Berio in terms of his passion for language, his extremely precise composition, his very deep immersion in semiotics and in the sonic possibilities of language, his collaboration with Edoardo Sanguinetti, who was one of the great contemporary poets of Italy. He worked on a couple of other major vocal works with Sanguinetti. In fact, he had three really great writing relationships with Sanguinetti, with Umberto Eco, and with Italo Calvino, with whom he did two operas.
It's, as you say, it's a sort of typical piece, which apart from the fact that it's got such an arresting start, is why I thought it would be a good place to begin. It's
it
dramatic,
was done here
it?
Once.
It was, isn't it? It was done in
It was done in 1975 originally, which is when I met Luciano, because we brought him and Kathy Barbarian to Australia for a music festival called Music Rostrum. And Luciano conducted Labyrinthus 2 in the Sydney Opera House.
Wow.
I know, because I programmed it.
I didn't realise that. It's dramatic, isn't it? And there's that lovely quote that I didn't write down and I'm now going to paraphrase, but perhaps you know it by heart, which is something like, see the music, hear the theatre.
Yes, exactly.
And I mean, that's obviously true of his operas and perhaps operas in general, but it's also true of his concert music. They're theatrical pieces.
They are very theatrical pieces and they're intensely musical pieces. He had a supreme compositional technique, matched by very few others in the 20th century, in my view. And he had a fascination with exploration compositionally. He was always challenging himself. He was one of the pioneers of electronic music. The big work that he built on Kathy Barbarian's voice, who was his first wife, Visage, was created in Milano in the radiophonic workshops of the RAI. And he did a number of pieces there, including the first piece that really addressed Joyce, because he was passionate about James Joyce. I mean, I've heard him talk so many times about the 11th chapter of Ulysses, the chapter that's about music. Mm. He did a work called Tema, Omaggio a Joyce, which was one of the first really great works of music concrète, and created entirely inside a studio. It's a wonderful piece, and Visage is an amazing, amazing work.
Yes, it's almost harrowing, actually, that piece, isn't it? So you met him in 75, you brought him to Australia in 75. Tell us about the man.
Well, Luciano had an absolute consuming passion for music. His whole life was absolutely dominated by thinking about pondering, creating, inventing, conducting, listening to music. He was a compleat musician, a musician's musician, a composer's composer, and a performer's performer, because his ears were astonishing. He could point to a single player in an orchestra and say, please stop doing that, and point to some minor moment of intonation or some slightly wrong gestural component in the way in which he'd written it. And musicians respected him so deeply. He was a virtuoso in anything he did musically, a virtuoso as a performer and a virtuoso as a composer. And he was a very performative person. He was not an easy person. He had the most explosive temper, and he lived life large in every possible way. He was a real trencherman with food, and he was a dedicated consumer of wine and other beverages.
And
he's a sensualist also.
And he was, perhaps we haven't said the word, but he was very Italian.
He was absolutely quintessentially Italian, and gesturally very much a person of the Mediterranean. He grew up in a town called Imperia Ornelia, which is very famous for olive oil. I mean, the people from that part of Liguria would say it's the best olive oil in the world. And you know, certainly it's a very different style of olive oil. It has a great nuttiness. And the virgin olive oil from there is really very, very special. In fact, one of his old school chums used to deliver a couple of dozen bottles of the first pressing every year to Luciano in Rome. He's amazing person. Very great privilege to have known him, you know, if only for a couple of years. But it was a terrific experience.
I'll ask in a moment about him as a teacher. But before we do that, let's just pause and listen to some more music. On today's music show, I'm talking to Kim Williams, chair of the ABC, and former student of Luciano Berio on the occasion of Berio's centenary. Berio died in 2003. He composed, and they run throughout his life, this string of solo works called sequenze, sequences. They're each for a solo instrument, and the third one is for voice, and this is the voice of Kathy Barbarian, his first wife.
Sing to me. Do. could be a word. To be forget, to be forget, to be forget. To be go for us, to be 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 for us.
Those are the opening moments of Sequenza 3, a piece by Luciano Berio. That was the voice of Kathy Berberian, and it's one of 14 sequenzas, each for a different soloist, the others all for different solo instruments. Kim Williams, that's is it an etude? Is it a study, or is it a sort of dramatic scena? What kind of piece is this, do you think?
Well, these are masterful performative pieces, written for specific individuals where they are tested to the extreme, but they are all utterly compelling. And of course, in performance, they're fiendishly difficult. And so you can see that the performer is working very, very hard. That's a live recording. That's not something created in a studio. That is Kathy performing that piece. I've heard her perform that piece probably 20 times. Mm. And it's a really riveting experience, and audiences that are not inducted to, inverted commas, that kind of music are utterly gripped by a performance of a work like that. Kathy did it as a party piece. I mean, she knew it so well. It was written specifically for her, as were dozens and dozens and dozens of other bespoke pieces designed around Kathy Berberian's voice.
You say written for Kathy Berberian's voice, but actually they were written for her voices, weren't they? Because she could...
Indeed.
She was an incredible mimic.
She
was. And in folk songs, which is a setting of folk songs from different parts of the world, she has almost a different voice for each song.
She does. There's one which is called Black is the Colour of My True Love's Hair, where she really embraces a kind of southern spiritual tonality. But others are from Azerbaijan and from Armenia. Kathy was an Armenian and spoke fluent Armenian.
Did she?
She
was born in America, I think, wasn't she?
She was. Her mother and she spoke in Armenian, and she would speak to her brother, Eddie, in Armenian, and Eddie ran the Balkan Armenian restaurant in New York, which was on the Lower East Side. He was a very larger-than-life character.
Well, look, let's listen to the beginning of Folk Songs, which is that song, Black is the Colour. And it's got a beautiful viola solo at the opening, which is played by Walter Trampler with the Juilliard Ensemble on this recording.
I love the grass whereon he stands.
that's Black is the Colour, the opening song from Folk Songs from 1964 by Luciano Berio. And we heard the voice of Kathy the Barbarian and the viola of Walter Trampler with the Juilliard Ensemble conducted by the composer himself. On today's music show on ABC Radio National, I'm speaking to Kim Williams, who was a student of Berio's in the 1970s. He ruled out no kind of music, did he? He was interested in every sort of music that was out
there. Absolutely. He was passionately interested in everything from minimalism. I've forgotten that Steve Reich was one of his students in America and actually studied with Berio for about 2 or 3 years, and always regarded Luciano as being fundamental to his sense of perspective in music.
The other thing I was thinking as I was listening to that was that lovely viola solo, which is kind of rhythmically dissociated from the actual song. I mean, they happen at the same time, but they're not absolutely lined up, is something that I have nicked from Berio, along with quite a lot of other things.
And I'm so very glad to hear that, Andy. It's the most serious form of flattery.
which brings me to Berio as a teacher. How did he teach?
Not very well. I mean, he was a teacher by example. I mean, what you did is you studied his work and you looked at how it worked structurally and how things came together, and you asked a lot of questions, as you always do when you're learning.
But were you working almost as an apprentice then?
Yes, it was very much so. In fact, on the very big work Choral, which is for 40 instrumentalists and 40 vocalists who are all paired in the work, I worked extensively on that piece with Balz Trumpi, who is a much celebrated Swiss composer who I think it's probably the most celebrated Swiss composer from the city of Basel.
What did you do then on Choro, you and Balz? What were your jobs?
Luciano would sketch things out and you would fill them in, and then he would come to the table with a very daunting device. It was looked rather like a gun, and it was an eraser that he would apply with searing severity over your work, because you worked in pencil. And you say, why is that there? And you say, well, you know, it seemed where you were going, and that you did a similar thing in such and such and such and such. And he'd say, no. And then he would rub it out with this device, where he'd say, yes, okay, and move on.
This is like Michelangelo painting the Sistine Chapel ceiling.
Well, Luciano always accepted far, far more commissions than he could possibly do, and he never said no, and provided that the commission was something that he was interested in, of course. But he was always years behind on his commissions. So he ran an Italian system. It's very much his music. I mean, no one would be under any doubt whatsoever. It is 100% the music of Luciano Berio.
And that's another thing about him, the recognisability of his music, no matter what kind of style he is drawing
on.
A bit like Ravel, it still sounds like him.
Absolutely, that's so true.
Well, we've got
In fact, I don't think his music is performed nearly often enough.
Well, I wanted to ask about it. It's gone out of fashion.
It has. It has. And the Sinfonia just doesn't get done anymore.
No.
And it is a masterwork above so many other works. I mean, it is one of the supreme masterworks of the 20th century.
When people said to me, I don't understand contemporary music, I always said, well, go and listen to Berio. That's the place to start.
Exactly.
And I would say that because there's something very immediately attractive about Berio's music, I think, and perhaps it's lyrical, perhaps it's that it's dramatic, perhaps it's that it explains itself rather well to the listener.
Well, in fact, I think it operates in a continuity of Italian repertoire going back to Palestrina and before. It is absolutely in an Italian tradition of composition. The way fashion governs so many things in modern life, I find really deeply irritating, because I think to understand the 20th century, you have to understand the music and perspective of a master like Luciano Berio. If the sonorities of the 20th century were created by Stravinsky, Debussy, and Schoenberg, which I believe very strongly, you then move into the middle of the century and you have Boulez, Berio, and Stockhausen, and I know they're all men, but they're fundamental to what happened to music in the 20th century, and all things are reflections from that.
There's 40 singers, 40 instruments, and they're paired up across the platform.
And all of the poetry is primarily taken from Neruda. And folk, of course, it's about folk songs from all over the planet.
Exactly,
And so diverse. I mean, it's a very great work, I think.
There's one Neruda poem which keeps coming back, and you get a little bit more of it each time.
Mm-hmm.
And the line is, come and see.
Yes.
And finally it turns out, come and see the blood in the streets.
Yes.
That's a little of Coro by Luciano Berio, a piece from the mid-1970s that he composed with Kim Williams as one of his assistants. And Kim Williams, who's now chair of the ABC, is my guest on today's music show on ABC Radio National. And we're talking about Berio. It's his centenary this year. When I think of Berio's music and when I think of him, I suppose I always think of the 1960s and of this rather suave-looking figure looking almost identical to Peter Sellers in the horn-rimmed spectacles. And in a sense, the 60s, that period, the politics of the 60s, they never really went away, did they?
No, he was very much a creature of the transformative politics in Italy during the 1960s, and the impact of people, well, of a lot of philosophers, and which included Umberto Eco, politicians like Enrico Berlinguer, who was the leader of the Italian Communist Party and who was proposing what was called the compromesso storico, which the historic compromise between the Christian Democrats and the Communists, which didn't happen, you know, to come into being, but which changed the whole fabric of the way in which Italy thought and behaved, and it's certainly reflected in contemporary Italian society today. And it was so effective that, in fact, all of the instruments of the state were sort of divided politically between, if you had a democratic Christian as the president of something like the RAI, you would have the director of the institute being a communist, and you'd have the music director being a socialist. Mm. And it was about trying to fashion these accommodations that reflected a diversity of opinions. It was also a period of deep political angst and turmoil, and the Red Brigades were very, very active at that time when I was living in Italy, and the terrible, catastrophic kidnapping and assassination of Moro, who was the prime minister. It was a remarkable time. The Piazza Fontana bombing took place in Milano while I was living there. You paid attention wherever you went, I can assure you, Andy.
The piece that you've already mentioned and that we're going to finish with, Sinfonia, is from 1968. Some part of the text is actually slogans written on walls during the May événement in Paris. But there's also a beautiful musical memorial to Martin Luther King. So that's how hot off the press it was. I mean, King was...
And he did several versions of O King. There was a separate vocal rendition of O King, and then it was the second movement of the Sinfonia. This used the Swingle singers, who had become famous for the renditions of Bach they did in a cappella, which were captivating.
Absolutely.
But they specialised in contemporary music, and Luciano did a number of pieces for them. In the Sinfonia, you can hear Ward Swingle all through the piece saying, keep going, keep going. And, it's an electric work. I think all of the music has this sense of urgency about it. And that's right through into the music that, at the end of his life. There's a tremendous sense of momentum and urgency and really saying, pay attention, let's get into this.
The movement we're going to hear is the middle movement. It's a palimpsest, I think is the word, that underneath the whole thing is the scherzo from Mahler's Resurrection Symphony, and everything else is piled on top, including a lot of other music.
Yes, a huge amount of other music, many of the masterpieces of the 20th century. And it seems to me it's almost like peering into his head, and you hear all these little flashes of La Mer of Debussy, or you hear a little bit of Boulez, or you hear a little piece of Ravel, or you hear a little piece of Stravinsky, and then there's a piece of Strauss. And
And then Mamala keeps poking its head up.
It's a dazzlingly virtuosic construction.
And on top of it all, the Swingle singers are not only singing, but as you say, Ward Swingle is reciting these words from Beckett.
Correct.
The unnameable.
Mm. Yes.
So it's a collage. And I wonder whether you think it's perhaps related to his early works with tape recorders.
I'm sure that it comes from that compositional rubric.
Cutting things up.
Yes, cutting things up and mixing them up. But also he always had this fascination with the sonic possibilities of language. He really was fascinated with semiotics, which was very fashionable in the 60s and 70s, less so today. But it was a very interesting time where people were into deconstruction and reconstruction. And it was a very analytical period. Everything was being analysed. Society was being analysed. And, of course, Berio was very much into dealing with the thing he knew best, which was analysing music.
Well, we'll hear the end of that movement to finish with. First of all, you'll hear Ward Swingle talking about how he shall never again hear the lowing cattle or the rush of a stream, at which point we'll hear a little of Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony. Then there's a bit of La Mer of Debussy. And then Swingle says, I have a present for you. And we hear the opening chord of Don, meaning gift, by Boulez. And then there's a bit of Webern and a bit of Gruppen of Stockhausen, and under all of it is the scherzo from the Resurrection Symphony. There is nothing quite like this music. Kim Williams, thank you very much indeed for being my guest once again and talking once again about Berio.
Lovely to be with you, Andy.
It's late now. She'll never hear again the lowing cap, the rush of the stream. In a chamber, dimensions unknown, I do not move and never shall again on long road or short. The fact is, I trouble no one, but I did. And after each group disintegration, the name of Mayakovsky hangs in the clean air. Ourselves face to face, and they remind us that all this can't stop the wars, can't make the young or lower the price of bread.
Say it again, louder!
Can't stop the wars, can't make the old younger or lower the price of bread, can't ease solitude and all the tread outside the door. We can only nod, yes, it's true, but we need to remind, to point. All is with us, always, except perhaps at certain moments, here among these rows of balconies, in a crowd or out of crowd, perhaps waiting to enter, watching. And tomorrow we'll read that Beethoven's fourth concerto made tulips grow in my garden and altered the flow of the ocean currents. We must believe it's true. There must be something else, otherwise it would be quite hopeless. But it is quite hopeless, unquestioning. But it can't go on.
it sail, not knowing what. It's getting late, where now, when now? I have a present for you. Keep going, page after page, keep going, going on. Call that going, call that on, but wait. He is barely moving now, almost still. Should I make my introductions? Christiane Legrand, first soprano. Janet Bocomo, second soprano. Claudine Meunier, first contralto. Hélène Leveau, second contralto. Joseph Noves, first tenor. Paul Swinger, second tenor. José Germain, first bass. Jean Cusack, second bass. But now it's done. It's over. We've had our chance. There was even, for a second, hope of resurrection, or almost. Mein junges Leben hat ein Ende. We must collect our thoughts, for the unexpected is always upon us, in our rooms, in the street, at the door, on a stage.
That's the end of the third movement of Luciano Berio's Sinfonia, Berio himself conducting the New York Philharmonic Orchestra and the Swingle Singers. The piece was commissioned by the New York Philharmonic in the 1960s and is dedicated to Leonard Bernstein. Berio would have turned 100 this year, and there hasn't been enough fuss, as far as I'm concerned. We should have been hearing much more of his music. Let's hope we do in the future. The music show was produced by C. Benedict and Salome Lines Morris, and our thanks to Steve Fieldhouse for mixing our doofy folk stuff, and Harvey O'Sullivan for mixing the whole show, which was made this week on Gadigal, Gundungurra, Turrbal and Yagara country. Coming up in the next few weeks, we're giving you our usual summer highlights, more chances to hear some excellent interviews with people such as Quiney, the Scottish musician who goes around on a horse called Maisie, the South African genre-defining cellist Abel Selashwe, and Irish bouzouki player Derry Farrell. And we'll have some of our best features as well, including the wild story of how a broken piano ended up as the centerpiece of the best-selling piano solo album ever made, and 50 years of Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run. We'll be back at the end of January with brand new shows and a brand new time slot as well. We're going to be an afternoon show for next year. In the meantime, have a very happy summer and a very happy Christmas.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.